Members, we will get the meeting in the House Commerce Committee to order. We do not officially have a quorum. We're one person short, so we will start out. We're going to start with Representative Loon's bill, House File 1127, and we won't be able to officially act on it until we do have a quorum, but we'll start hearing testimony. Now I think we're official and legal and have a quorum. So with that, while Representative Loon, while you are getting ready, we will have Representative Slocum ask if she has had a chance to look at the minutes and would like to move approval of the minutes from yesterday's meeting.
Mr. Chair, I have perused the minutes and for March 10, and I would like to move that we okay them.
Thank you very much, Representative Slocum. I appreciate that. Any questions, concerns, comments on the minutes? Seeing none, those in favor of the approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved from yesterday. Thank you, Representative Slocum. Representative Loon, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll be very brief to allow my testifiers to more thoroughly explain the bill. But House File 1127 is referred to as the Savings Promotion Raffles, or as it's more commonly known, Prize Link Savings. And this is made possible for both credit unions and banks by a recent action at the federal level. The concept is pretty simple. It would actually allow our savings institutions to be able to offer to folks that have accounts at their banks that if they put amount of money into their own savings accounts, their names would be entered into drawings and they may win something. So basically it's an incentive for people to save money, which is I think a good thing, a good goal, and something that we want to promote in terms of being good financial literacy and good practice for citizens. So that is basically it. I do have a small amendment to the bill that is in your packets. It's the A15-0151 amendment.
That sounds good. Do you want to go ahead and offer that right now?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Sounds good to me. Any questions or discussion? Everybody have the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor of the adoption of the A15-0151 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Loon, the bill is now in the shape that you want it to be in. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, well, that's really all I need to say about it, and I would ask if my testifier from the credit unions would like to offer a few more comments.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Lindsay Miller, and I'm the Associate General Counsel of the Minnesota Credit Union Network, and I'm also here representing the Minnesota Credit Union Foundation, which is the network's charitable arm focused on financial literacy initiatives. Prizely savings accounts help motivate individuals to save by rewarding smart savings behavior. These account models have been implemented both internationally. 11 states have now passed PrizeLink savings laws, and there are currently 4 other states pending legislation to allow for PrizeLink savings accounts to help more people save through the excitement of winning. PrizeLink savings accounts are working. Across the states that offer them, between 62 and 81% of account holders were considered financially vulnerable. Overall, between 81 and 85% of those participants rolled over their accounts between years. So we are seeing long-term savings behavior developed with these account programs. In 2013, average account balances ranged between $921 and $2,662. Since this product was first offered in 2009, beginning with the state of Michigan, over 50,000 account holders have collectively saved approximately $94 million. America is facing a savings crisis. Approximately a quarter of U.S. citizens have absolutely no savings at all, and 48% would have to borrow money or sell assets to come up with approximately $400 if they had a car repair or a doctor bill or some other sort of financial emergency. With the success we've seen in other states, there's every reason to be optimistic that we can achieve this same level of attainment here in Minnesota. While PrizeLink savings accounts may not totally solve the savings crisis that we find ourselves in today, they will go a long way towards helping people develop strong savings habits. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have regarding the specifics.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Members, any questions? Representative Sandin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess whoever wants to answer this.
People that have automatic deductions into savings, so they're entered into the contest weekly then?
Ms. Miller?
Would that be the case?
Thank you, Chair and Mr. Representative. Yes, it depends on what sort of multiplier is available. So typically there is a limit on the monthly amount of entries or deposits that can be made in order to have a fair opportunity for everyone participating to be a winner. That limit is typically 10 entries, so someone can make deposits as often as they like.
Thank you. Members, other questions? Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to come down and speak for or against this bill? And I should note, it looks like we're getting some shrugging, but I should note for members, in case anybody is wondering, the Minnesota bankers are okay with the bill this year. This has been a bill in front of us in one form or another for several years now. So I think there is, as we like to say, finally peace in the valley. Seeing no other questions and no other people coming down, Representative Loon will give you the final word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the members. I'd like to thank that we've got strong bipartisan co-authorship on the bill, and like I said, I think it's just a nice incentive for people to do what we know is a good idea, which is to save for their future, for whatever purposes they may have, whether it's saving for a home or car or retirement or college or any number of good purposes, and this just is kind of a nice thing for our credit unions and banks to be able to do to encourage people to engage in that behavior. So with that, I would, again, like to move House File 1127 as amended to be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Loon. You all heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
The shower will take care of
the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Davids. Thank you, Representative Loon and Ms. Miller. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Let's do that. Which one? Oh, that must be next. Which one do you want to do? Okay. Representative Loonan, do you want to come down and we'll jump right into House File 1290? It's always a fan favorite.
It is.
Representative Loonan, I think I heard you say this wasn't your first bill.
No.
Is this your first bill today?
That would be correct.
Sorry. Somebody else said that. I thought it was a good line, so I stole it. I'm a believer in plagiarism.
Mr. Chairman, I want to move House File, ask to move House File 1290. And this is kind of a simple bill with a little bit of history behind it. Those of you that have auto insurance with full coverage on it, actually comprehensive coverage on your car, have been assessed 50 cents a policy period, which would be 6 months, so a dollar a year, for an anti-theft fund. And what had happened, when times got tight, they now allocate half of the money from that fund into the general fund. And we've got a couple of bills out there to try to take on and improve our insurance fraud situation, and are looking to go back and reallocate this money back into the account that it was originally designed to take care of, and put it back in the fraud prevention fund.
Mr. Johnson?
I have a testifier today, Bob Johnson from the Insurance Federation.
Yep. Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Representative Loonan has described the bill. I guess I would just tell the committee there is a broad cross-section of public-private sector that fully supports this effort and has for a number of years. As Representative Loonan says, let's get the money back into the account for the purposes that we're collecting it from Minnesota drivers. So I support the bill, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Members, any questions? Anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Representative Loonan will give you the final word.
Again, this bill is just an attempt to put money back into the account it was originally allocated to go into, and put it to work for trying to minimize some of the fraud situations.
We have a question. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Loonan. Has there been a fiscal note associated with this, and do we know how it's going to affect the general account?
Representative Lunin.
That is a good question. I have not seen a fiscal note, but right, we would be taking money out of the general fund, so I would suppose that that would be appropriate.
Is it in the bill?
It's in the bill, and they'll deal with it next. Members, they're going to deal with that issue in the next committee. It's actually in the bill. It's in the body of the bill. So there is, but there's not a fiscal note. excuse me. And we're going to send this on to the Jobs and Energy Finance Committee, and they're going to do with it what they will. Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Lunin renews his motion that House File 1290 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Energy Finance. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lunin. And that bill is on its way. Representative Lunin, don't go far. We'll go ahead and do your next bill, House File 294.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask that we move House File 294.
And I believe we're going right to the general register with that, Representative Lunin. Go ahead and tell us what you want, or if you want to introduce your testifier, whatever your preference is.
The well, first of all, I want to describe the bill and just do a real brief insurance overview. In health care, when an employer purchases coverage, and you might be familiar with it with disability, where you have short-term disability and long-term disability. Well, in health care, the long-term would be considered reinsurance. It's never going to pay first. And right now in statute, when an employer of under 50 employees purchases reinsurance, going to self-insure their health care experience and purchases reinsurance to take care of the high end, they are not allowed to purchase a policy with a deductible, otherwise known as an attachment point or stop loss, less than $20,000. In a lot of cases, that makes purchasing that product unfavorable or undoable, and that $20,000 is per employee. This bill looks to create the option in a more favorable way for these self-employed people and get that number down from $20,000 down to $6,500, which seems like an arbitrary number, but we came up with that number taking a look at what other states are doing currently, and that was the one that came up the most often, so we thought that would be the starting point to do this. My testifier today, his first name is Vaughn. I do not know his last name. We aren't even friends on Facebook yet. I just met him about 20 minutes ago.
Well, Representative Lunin and Vaughn, we'll get to your name in a second. Why don't we go ahead and do the A1 amendment right now? I assume that's an author's amendment?
Yep. The A1 amendment just cleans up some of the language. The on line 1.8 to eliminate the coverage of all and submitting the word the following. And just it then it goes through and also eliminates regardless of when the claims are. And what this is talking about here is health insurance policies typically are what we call an occurrence policy. The policy that's going to pay is the one in force when the injury or the illness occurred. Well, they may go to the doctor a couple days after that and or incur the bills after that, and it creates a pay period or a tail after it. So even though an employer may change carriers, they would go back and submit that claim to the previous insurance company that they had in force when the actual loss occurred.
Thank you, Representative Lunin. We will go ahead and vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is now in the shape that the author would like it to be. Now we can have our testifier, Representative Lunin.
Hello, Chairman Hoppe and committee members. I'm Vaughn Francis. I've been in health insurance and group benefits for quite a while, as you might imagine, most of it in the self-insured world. And I was asked by MAHU to testify on their behalf. The Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters supports this bill and believes that it will increase the number of options that are available to small employers, and that also it'll make those options more affordable for employers and employees. There's also some reasons in relating to wellness, in the sense that the current federal regulatory environment allows employers to have differentials or financial incentives for employees who meet or proceed towards certain wellness goals. However, small employers who are only allowed to be fully insured are disincented from doing that type of wellness approach because there's no reward in it for them.
So. Thank you, Mr. Francis. Anybody else that wants to come down and speak for or against the bill, please come on down. Mr. Graves, welcome back to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I will keep my comments very brief. Suffice to say that we fully support this bill. We hear very often from our members that in the struggle to keep healthcare costs in control, many would like to look at the option of self-insuring, but under current rules and statute, just can't find the wherewithal to do so, given the deductibles what they are. So we fully support lowering those to bring them in line with more states to give more small employers the option to look at self-insuring.
Thank you, Mr. Graves.
Thank you.
Mr. Hickey or Mr. Van A, whoever's next. Welcome back to the committee, sir.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. We're the largest and the prominent small business group in the state, as many of you know, with 13,000 members. We really struggle with this health insurance issue. We strongly support this bill and appreciate Representative Lonen for bringing it forward. Small business has really had a rough go with it under the federal health care law, and we need every option we can get, and the changes we're making here is going to make it easier, more affordable for small employers to take a look at self-funding through this bill, and we appreciate you bringing it forward and urge you to pass it.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Appreciate it. Mr. Van Hay. Welcome back to the committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Tim Vande, Deputy Commissioner of Insurance for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on House File 294. The department does not support this bill, which would lower Minnesota's $20,000 attachment point and result in inconsistencies with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners model law. To lower would place us below the national standard and may cause adverse selection to the standard market if smaller employers with very healthy employees are drawn to this option. Traditionally, self-insurance was a way for sophisticated and typically large businesses to retain their own insurance risk and become, in essence, their own insurer to achieve favorable results from the internal management of their insurance program. The critical distinction between fully insured plans, which are subject to insurance laws, and self-insurance health plans, which, under the provisions of Section 514 of ERISA, are exempt from state insurance regulations. The level of retained risk represented by the attachment point of stop-loss coverage should be distinct and clearly higher than traditional deductible plans available in the standard market, reflecting the distinction between deductible policies and managing one's own risk through self-insurance. ERISA plans do not need to follow the same benefit requirements placed on fully insured plans. Employees could be harmed by having less robust health coverage, may not have access to free preventative care, and less consumer protections under ERISA plans due to discretionary clauses for ERISA plans that Commerce opposes as it reduces claim protections and undermines progress we have made in the insurance market to date. In addition, any change made by the Minnesota may be made moot by the Employee Benefit Security Administration. EBSA officials explained recently in 2014 why the Labor Department believes that states can set and appear to support increasing minimum attachment points for stop-loss plans in a new batch of guidance issued last year. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Vandehey. Representative O'Driscoll, did you have a comment or a question?
I did for the testifier, something that he had said that I'd like to have him clarify if he could.
For Mr. Vandehey or for
Mr. Vandehey?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vandehey. Appreciate you coming back.
Mr. Vandehey, you had in your remarks to the commission, to the committee, excuse me, had said that you were concerned about issues of adverse selection. Can you explain how those issues of adverse selection would still exist under the ACA everybody's in, no pre-existing conditions?
Mr. Vandehey.
Chair, Representative, thanks for the question. It's a very good one. I would indicate that under self-insurance, if you lower the attachment point, it may be more attractive to certain smaller employers that have very healthy populations, and thus you could be carving out a healthier population and putting upward pressure on the rates in the standard market. And so that would be the adverse selection that I'd be talking about, as well as the variability associated with a self-insured plan, in which over time, if you actually are no longer have a strong, healthy population of employees, you will find that self-funded plans become more expensive as the stop-loss coverage increases.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then isn't that the same risk that every plan under ACA runs the risk of, every provider is being overloaded through adverse selection the way you've described it today?
Mr. Vandehey.
Chair, Representative, I'm not sure if providers are necessarily feeling the pinch of adverse selection, since I think the ACA has fully insured more residents in our state, and they are receiving compensation from the insurers for that coverage.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is my last inquiry of the testifier. So when we had in Minsure, we had a rather large provider that their price point was fairly attractive, and they decided that they were pulling out because of business concerns. Would this not then, under the model that you're talking about, drive insurance costs even further and not make them affordable for people if we were to settle on the adverse selection issue?
Mr. Vandehey.
Chair, Representative, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your using the term provider, as I was assumed that you were talking about a provider of a hospital.
Mr. O'Driscoll, or Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Yes, it's a terminology. The provider would be the healthcare facility, the insurer who would be providing the benefits under the under a contract, even though it's an excess coverage because it's self-insured. My question would be, wouldn't those premiums end up going up because of adverse selection? We're kind of seeing some of that potentially with Minsure, where we had the provider pull out because everybody said, hey, I'm going to go, it's a cheaper policy. Don't we run that risk as well with premiums going up because of people wanting to manage for those types of risks?
Mr. Vandehey.
Chair, Representative, I think what we're seeing right now in the marketplace is higher utilization expectation than anticipated, and that's what's driving putting upward pressure on the rates, not necessarily adverse selection to any one carrier, because the federal government has three mitigation programs: the risk corridor program, the risk adjustment program, as well as the federal reinsurance, which mitigates that risk between now and 2017.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for Mr. Vandehey, as I'm thinking through this, I'm thinking about the way that, I mean, insurance essentially is managing and pooling risk. And if you have a very small pool that self-insures, and you have one catastrophic illness, you have one, you know, million-dollar baby, what does that do to the pool, and what kind of risk is there to the employer and to the other folks in that small self-insured pool, and how would this bill impact that?
Mr. Vandehey.
Chair, Representative. The important thing that, you know, I'm sorry, could you repeat that question? I guess I got kind of lost with the provider.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so as I'm thinking about the way that we pool risk and mitigate risk, that's kind of what self-insurance is about, taking on the risk, as opposed to having an insurance company with a larger risk pool take on the risk for you. So if we've got a self-insured pool of 50 or less employees, and they have medical expenses in 1 year that are an outlier, if one of the people in the pool has cancer, has a premature baby, what does that do to the pool? And I think this might speak a little to your adverse selection comments as well.
Mr. Vandehey.
Chair, Representative, your point is well taken. With regards to self-insurance, I think that many of us can understand that the idea of insurance is to spread the risk, and that having a critical mass at a certain point allows for a greater spread of that risk. Small employers that do self-insure and have an incident of a high utilizer during the year will be protected by the stop-loss for that year. However, when they renegotiate the stop-loss coverage costs, that will be a consideration of that cost going forward. And so the adverse selection could come from self-insureds that over time an individual employee may become a high utilizer, no longer providing the advantage of self-insuring. I hope that answered your question. To go further,
I could
mention the fact that I think that it's pretty general understanding that when you think about negotiating rates or negotiating your insurance needs. The larger the pool that you have, the more effective you are at doing it. Very small employers, those less than 10 employees, can have a very challenging time, just as if any of us individuals tried to pool our interests together as our family to try to get health insurance. So it may provide a benefit in the short term if to the small employer. However, in the long term, it's likely that they're going to need community rating and come back to the standard market when they do so. And then they will not be contributing to spreading the costs over the larger population.
Representative Lunan, did you want to comment to that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. He just made the point for okaying this bill. What the reassurance does is exactly what you said, Representative, it negates the risk on the high end. That's why you buy the reinsurance. The self-insurance component has to do with the bottom end, with the front dollars. And if you think deductible, that's what we're talking about. And the small employers, when you put on an onerous figure like $20,000, there you're creating the risk. So several times now, the presenter here has made my case for me that this is why this bill is so important to small businesses.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I think about both of your comments, I think to different experiments that we have done as a state with pools, creating various pools that are outside of kind of state mandates and state regulation, and our state's history with those have not been particularly successful, if I remember right, because they tend to collapse under their own weight because sick people tend to stay in the pool and the healthy people leave because of the cost.
Did Mr. Vandeheer or Representative Luna?
Chair, thanks for the opportunity to speak again. I truly appreciate the discussion that we're having here today. I would indicate, though, that one of the main points I made earlier was the fact that there is a clear distinction between self-insurance and a deductible policy. And there are deductible policies available in the standard market that allows for the spreading of the risk and better coverage to the employees that we're talking about. And so for the comment to be suggested that having those more aligned or be equal, I would suggest it undermines what self-insurance was intended to do.
And Mr. Vandeheer, it is the official position of this committee that talking about insurance is always fun. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this would be either to Representative Lunan or Mr. Vandeheer. So in the scenario where there's the catastrophic event for a particular employee, there's no protected class for that individual. So an employer could decide that having that person as part of our pool is no longer beneficial to the company cost-wise, and they could just dismiss them for virtually no cost, correct?
Either one of you gentlemen want to take that?
Chair, I'm
Mr.
not.
Mr. Vandeheer?
Chair, I'm not an employee benefits expert, and so I don't know whether there would be cause for dismissing an employee simply because they got sick. I would suggest that that might be an alarming state that we would be in, that employers would be able to cut their costs simply because somebody got sick at a time in which we have guaranteed issue in the insurance market.
And I think we have some discrimination laws on the books that not only would prevent that, but I think at the time of a hire, that can't be a qualifying factor as to whether or not you hire me or not.
Gentlemen, I think we have Mr. Francis that wants to come back up and comment on Representative Dean's question. Mr. Francis, if you want to.
Yes, in the case of.
If you go ahead and sit so we can. There you go. Thank you, sir.
In the case of a large claimant, it's illegal according to the HIPAA regulations to identify who the claimant is. So even a small employer would not know who the person is. There's also discriminatory actions that can be taken if someone is let go for a reason like that. So, if that were true, if those things were true, and then it would be in a large employer's interest to do the same thing. And self-funding, what someone said here, there's traditionally been the bailiwick of large employers, and that's true. And the primary reason that large employers do it is because they get to avoid premium taxes that way. But stop-loss pays premium taxes. And so for a small employer, they're not avoiding taxes doing this. They are gaining some flexibility. They're gaining the ability to have some other options. But large employers have had this. This is really just kind of creating a level playing field between large employers and small employers. Most of the large employers in Minnesota are homegrown. They were all small employers at some time.
Thank you, Mr. Francis. Representative Dean, that's good. Anybody else want to speak for or against this bill? Anybody in the audience? Mr. Francis?
I do want to address a couple of things that were said earlier, if that's permissible.
If you could be very brief about it, we'd appreciate that.
Free preventive care is mandated federally. It has nothing to do with stop loss. Whether a plan is self-funded or not self-funded, free preventive care is a part of the health plan. Secondly, as far as the way it's spread across the states, 28 states have absolutely no regulation of stop loss. So majority of states have never passed a law that regulates stop loss at all. Minnesota is surrounded by states that don't have any kind of regulation like this. And will continue to be after this, even if this bill is adopted.
Mr. Vandeheer, if you want to make another comment, feel free. Otherwise, we'll give Representative Lunan the final word.
I'd be real good to get the
premise. Mr. Vandeheer, we appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Representative Lunan, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this bill does is it allows a small employer to buy a suit that fits them. When they take a look at the demographics of their employers and the coverages that are unique to them, it allows them to go outside the norm of some of the requirements in the ACA and tailor the coverage more to the needs that they have, potentially not purchasing coverage that they have no chance of ever using, and then using those resources to up the coverage that they have a likelihood that they may incur. So I would appreciate a supportive vote.
Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 294, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lunan and testifiers. With that, we'll go to the last bill on the agenda, House File 5, Representative Mack. Representative Mack, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 5 so it is properly in front of us. And with that, feel free to tell us about your bill. And I'm not. And you can either do a brief explanation, or if you want to go right into author's amendments, I understand there are two of those.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. I'm trying to think of the best way to do it, Mr. Chair, and I guess I can just briefly introduce the bill and then offer my author's amendments and explain them and then kind of do a walk through the bill as it stands.
Sounds
after
good.
The amendments are offered. Just as an introduction, Mr. Chair and members, House File 5 is in front of you dealing with MNSURE, and as we assess the challenges that we have been dealing with since the inception of MNSURE, some of which were built in to the original architecture of MNSURE, and some of which have resulted from a lack of planning 2 years ago and planning for some of the challenges that were going to arise. As a result of those challenges, House File 5 brings some of the proposals forward that we think would address many of the challenges that have plagued MNSURE over the past 2 years. And so I understand that there's a lot of work yet to be done. We've worked with, been in close contact with the Department of Health, Department of Human Services, MNSURE, talked with board members, trying to figure out what are the ways that we can get at some of the systemic challenges that are facing MNSURE. House File 5 is in front of you today as a result of some of those challenges. And so with that, Mr. Chair, first I would like to move the A14 amendment.
I will move the A14 amendment.
I can't move
Mack.
It. I'd like to
It
moved, Mr. Chair.
That is all right. We have attempted mutiny here all the time. I will move the A14 amendment. Do you want to briefly explain what that is, and then we'll vote on it?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and members. I will just walk you through the A14 amendment so you know what's going on. The first part adds Section 2, which would basically put the director of MNSURE within the Group 2 salary limits. That is pretty much the extent of what that does, trying to address some of the compensation issues, bonuses that were paid out in the first 2 years of Minsure and its Rocky rollout, which was a concern to many people. And so that's just clarifying the compensation plan for the director of Minsure. The next section that you see is going to try to provide some price transparency for consumers by requiring that rates be released 30 days prior to the federally determined open enrollment period. We think that this is just a good consumer-driven proposal to make sure that people are aware of what their rates are going to look like going into the next year and can be educated before open enrollment starts and they start shopping for the insurance for them and their family. The next section adds Section 14 to the bill, which would require Minsure to transmit a consumer's application to the health insurance provider of choice within 48 hours of submission. We have seen a lot of issues, and we'll continue to talk about this, I'm sure, as today goes on, but challenges that consumers and individuals across the state who enroll in Minsure are having when it comes to their information, getting to the plan that they choose. The back-end process of Minsure has been plagued since the start and is probably as bad now as it's ever been, if not worse, in terms of knowing whether or not the information that enrollees are putting in are getting to the plans accurately and in a timely fashion. And as a result, you can have somebody showing up at their doctor thinking that all their insurance information is taken care of and squared away, and that not being the case. And so what this would require is that a timely transmission of that information to plans. The next part adds Section 15, which would essentially fix a challenge that many Minnesotans are having when it comes to the tax credit. Currently, the way Minsure is designed is that if you filed jointly for your taxes, you could not buy separate plans on Minsure. And so what can happen is a married couple that files jointly, one of them might have significant health issues, the other one doesn't. Instead of them being able to buy two different plans with two different deductibles, they're forced to buy one family plan. And this is providing to be very cumbersome for many families, very taxing. And so basically what this would do would that it would allow a family, it would make the tax credit divisible by joint tax filers. And so, again, we think that this is a good consumer-driven option. And this is a federal requirement that we are codifying as direction to Minsure to make sure that this is possible. And then the last part of this amendment would make sure that Commerce would be required to seek a waiver that allows the small businesses to utilize the federal tax credit outside of the exchange. As we all are probably pretty familiar with, the shop portion of the exchange has been one of the biggest disappointments about Minsure. And this waiver would essentially codify what is already being done in current practice as a result of all the challenges that shop has faced in trying to meet the needs of small businesses. And so, members, that essentially sums up what is in the A14 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Chair Mack, help me out here a second, if you would. We're putting in law something that's already in law on page 3, lines 3.25, section 15 through 3.31. Why do we need to put in law what is already in law?
Representative Mack, the phrase belt and suspenders comes to mind, but I'll let you give a better answer than that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Davids. My understanding is, I think you raise a great question, and there may be some folks here from Minsure who might be able to speak to that and why that hasn't been done up to this point. But as we've seen reports, Star Tribune did some stories on this where families are getting quite plagued by the inability to buy separate plans through Minsure if they file jointly. And so we thought that this would be the best way to kind of be the extra stick that is needed to make sure that that's an option that consumers have going through the exchange.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Mack. So basically what we're saying is we really mean it.
Representative Mack.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, we really mean it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Mack. Minsure is violating federal law here, and this is very serious because instead of a person having, they might have a $1,000 deductible, now they go to $5,200, but no, it's actually $10,400. And law says you have to be able to split those off, and maybe as we later in the discussion, I'll be asking Minsure why you're not obeying federal law. And but Representative Mack, in this amendment, I'm starting to get phone calls from farmers that are dairy farmers. Had a very bad year in 13 because milk prices were low. Corn was at $7. They signed up, and the latest guy that called me said he had a $1,000 a month subsidy. This year, or 2014, he had a very good year because milk prices were high and corn was low, about $3.30 a bushel. And his accountant told him that he has to send that subsidy back. Does this amendment address that issue?
Representative Mack?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Davids. My understanding is that this amendment does not address that issue.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Davids, this bill might be making a stop in one of the various agriculture committees, and I think they'll handle that.
Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to have an amendment to put the word tax in this bill.
I think you, Mr. Chair, I think you always have that amendment in your pocket for various bills.
Very successful.
Representative Mack.
And Mr. Chair, just briefly back to the issue of the federal law, and this will... This should maybe certainly be a discussion as we have other people come to the table. My understanding is that this provision, even being in this amendment, is posing a challenge. MNsure does not have the IT infrastructure at this point to make those tax credits divisible by joint filers, which is a huge challenge and would lend itself to many of the IT challenges. And so, if nothing else, we're trying to put an impetus on this needs to get done. We're not serving the people of Minnesota well by not making this an option. And obviously, when it's federal law, it should be done anyway.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hello, Representative Mack. The Office of Legislative Auditor came and gave a detailed report not too long ago. I'm just curious if their recommendations are included in this report, and if you could point out where, just so I knew.
Good question, Representative Johnson. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson. There are some areas in the full bill that address some of the auditor's recommendations, so when I do the walkthrough of the rest of the bill in entirety, I can make sure to touch on that.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Representative Johnson, you cover that later. With that, why don't we go ahead, and I did want to do a little bit of a walkthrough on that amendment, because typically we just let authors put their amendments on, but this is a little bit longer, and I think it's making some bigger changes to the bill. So thank you, Representative Mack, and members, for your patience. With that, I will renew my motion for the adoption of the A14 amendment. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, members. And Representative Mack, your next amendment, which I believe is more technical in nature.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is the A12 amendment, and basically what this does is it just cleans up the language on page 9 of the bill. We deal with some issues related to the Legislative Oversight Committee of MNsure, and currently in the bill it's spelled out as the commission, and we just want to change that to say committee.
Sounds good to me. Thank you. Members, we will vote on the A12 amendment. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A12 amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Mack. Do you want to go ahead and proceed with the bill and testifiers right now? I know Representative O'Driscoll has an amendment, but I don't see him right now. Why don't we go ahead and proceed with the bill? And if you want to start walking through it and hit some of the highlights for Representative Johnson,
sure.
We would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So as we walk through House File 5, I'll just go section by section so everybody understands what's happening. The very first section would actually ask the Commissioner of Commerce in consultation with the Board of Directors of MNsure as well as the Legislative Oversight Committee to develop a proposal for a federal waiver that would allow for consumers to have access to the tax subsidies that are available through the ACA if they go outside of MNsure. Currently, the only way an individual could have access to those tax subsidies is if they go through the state exchange. We would argue that given the extreme hassles, sometimes unreliability of that information being transcribed and transmitted accurately and in timely fashion would merit the fact that they should have the option and choice of shopping outside of the exchange and still have access to those tax credits. It's a consumer-driven proposal for Minnesotans. The next section, as you move on to lines 2.17 of the bill. As many of you may remember, when MNsure was created 2 years ago, there were several exemptions given to the open meeting law. There were significant concerns at that time about why that was done to start, and we are basically striking those exemptions and making sure that MNsure has to operate by typical open meeting law requirements. As you move down the bill, lines 2.29, we're dealing with some more of the exemptions that MNsure was originally given, particularly Chapter 16B, which deals with Department of Administration oversight that MNsure was originally exempted from. We're striking that and making sure that they are subject to the same oversight as all other state departments. 16C, we're going to bring that back. That deals with oversight of procurement practices and contracting that MNsure was originally exempted from. We think that they need to, again, go through the proper procurement and contracting oversight that all other state departments and agencies go through. As you move through the bill, the next section of change is on line 3.5. Dealing with another exemption that MNsure was granted with Minute. And this is probably something that's familiar to everyone. We actually heard, I believe, an amendment on the floor last year that was voted on almost unanimously by Representative Kahn that would make sure that MNsure is no longer exempt from Minute oversight and requirements. The next section of the bill, Section 4, starting on line 3.15, deals with the makeup of the board. Basically, we are trying to address some holes and gaps in who should have been on the board and probably would lend a very helpful and informative voice. And so what we're doing is we are involving one member to the board who is an insurance producer and two members who are county employees dealing with the administration of public programs. And then down on line 4.1, we would add the chief information officer of Minute as one of the board members. We think that this would bring some increased soundness to the board and people that have frontline experience.
Representative Mack?
Yes.
Hold on just 1 second. I think we're working off of the wrong engrossment because I had things that weren't lining up here. So
okay.
Why don't we just take a brief pause? And Representative Lilly, is there anything you'd like to tell, any stories from your childhood or anything? Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I actually was thinking as we were kind of going, when she was going through the amendment earlier, I was thinking a little bit of our Department of Public Safety experience we had. And on.
I don't think we can tell that story in this mixed company here.
But it's interesting because a couple years ago, I remember, this will be a bipartisan comment, but we've had quite a bit of IT problems as a state, and that was revealed on that task force on the license plate, and then now we have some IT problems. And I don't know if you remember Representative Downey and then his cohort, Representative Kahn, getting together on IT issues. And I'm just thinking that perhaps that might have been the moment of some of this trouble for MNsure and the with the license bearer. Just thinking.
That, folks, is why the Commerce Committee is great. You call on Representative Lilly, and he brings up a very salient point that is pertinent and detailed and goes back with legislative historical accuracy. And what Representative Lilly was referring to is over the summer, we were on a, and this is, we're way afield here, we were on the, and we've mentioned it in committee before, we were on the task force dealing with uninsured motorists. And I think to the frustration of everybody in the committee, one of our biggest problems was the, I would say, decrepit state of the what we call the MNLAR system in the state of Minnesota. And I think, was it 2008 or 2009 when that started to get worked on a bipartisan basis? I think it was still under Governor Pawlenty, maybe Ventura, I don't remember anymore, but it was a ways ago.
Mr. Chair, I hate to interrupt, but I would not blame him. I think I would stick to the two members I mentioned.
I think we can all agree on that. But this has been an ongoing problem for a long time, and we have a mainframe system with that particular IT system that is so old, nobody in this country knows how to fix it anymore. We're going to Iron Curtain, former Iron Curtain countries, to get our mainframe patched up, and that holds all of our driver's license. Yeah, it's interesting. We're still using punch cards and things like that. So, Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair, can you even hack into a system like that?
You can hack into anything, Representative Davids, but you need to have a keen understanding of punch card technology and be working off a large Cray computer from the mid-1960s. Representative O'Driscoll.
Just for those gathered here, will you and Representative Lilly be appearing anywhere at on St. Patrick's Day? We can catch the rest of the act? Or
We're open to offers. We're willing to take this
together
on the road. We'll debate Kahn and Downey anywhere.
Mr. Chair, this committee's much more fun than HHS. And that's my committee.
So, Representative Mack, thank you. We weren't going to say anything, but, you know, we knew.
Did you televise today?
We're never televised.
We're
not televised in the basement hearing room. We did earlier have somebody up here with a camera. I don't know who he was with. I was going to ask him to come on down and make himself comfortable, but he left before I got to ask who he was. So I don't.
Mr.
I don't
Chair,
know.
I believe the camera broke when he brought it down here.
Well, that's by design. There's something in the atmosphere. Cell phones don't work well, and cameras are discouraged. Representative Sanders, anything you want to share with the committee? Okay. So this is the kind of thing that nobody ever likes to have happen, where we're working off the wrong engrossment. I thought it was just me for a second because Representative Mack and I were on the Minshew Oversight Committee for the last 2 years, and a lot of this stuff, I'm like, geez, I really fall far behind. She's way ahead of me on this. But fortunately, and John Reynolds, our capable CA, is getting the right engrossment now, so we should just be no more than like 45 minutes away from being elected.
Mr. Chair, I think we have time for Mr. Lunin to bring us snacks that he missed on his previous bill.
Representative Lunin.
Mr. Chair, I've had four people ask me about the snack issue, and I didn't bring snacks yesterday in my first bill because I assumed that Representative Schultz was bringing them, and then I would just end up with leftovers, and I gave up snacks for Lent.
Representative Lunin, that is a good excuse, and our freshmen don't have to bring snacks. Freshmen that come here from other committees. We should start writing some of these rules down. We've never had, Representative Davids, do you remember ever having written rules for the committee? Yeah. We think
Mr.
is
Chair, written rules can be bad.
Oh yeah, that's
can
why
come
we
back
don't have
to haunt you.
It's possible that some former chairs in the past had written rules, but they've been lost to the annals of history. Anybody? Anybody? Representative Howerson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, keeping in the spirit of helping educate freshman lawmakers, which was very helpful to me when I was a freshman, one thing that I did hear in Representative Lunin's introduction to his bill was that it was a simple bill. And I don't know if you guys have let him know how dangerous those words can be in terms of bringing jinxes upon your bills.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we were just going to let him find out.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Good tip. Representative Sanders, also a good tip. I recently had, and I don't think he's in this room, but I recently had a lobbyist come up to me and said, I have a simple bill. It's three parts. And I said, you've lost me.
Mr. Chair, it's becoming abundantly clear why we're scheduled till 5 o'clock tonight.
Well, we can come back in the evening, too. We don't know. You know, is anybody else thinking we need the distiller guys back today? That would maybe help move things along a little.
Maybe they can open their bottles.
You didn't have any as it went by? Nobody did. That was a joke. That was gin. We drink vodka here. Also a joke. Just kidding. No cameras. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to share that, and I was just sharing with Representative Sanders, that the bunker where they put the president when they need to hide him actually uses the really old computers because they can't get hacked into. So maybe we're ahead of the game and we don't even know it.
Well, Representative Tice, I'm feeling pretty good about the old Royal manual typewriter I got in the garage. And there are, I did read somewhere that there are now international spy agencies that are using manual typewriters because they do what they did in the 60s. They burn the ribbon and it can't be hacked. Representative?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
I had the opportunity on a kind of a miserable day outside to sneak away for a few seconds, and I was listening to the radio, and I understand the Green Giant is possibly for sale or the company, and we happen to have a fairly wealthy individual on this committee, and I didn't know if that was part of, you know, something that he might be acquiring in the near future, or it just seems like a some Minnesotan should really invest in a and buy a Minnesota institution.
Representative Johnson, are you buying Green Giant? the other wealthy individual.
Representative Kreischer has retained me to say that he's not interested.
Mr. Chair, fortunately, Mr. Reynolds is back, and maybe we can rein this back in.
I don't know. Maybe we should take a little bit more of a break. This was going pretty well.
All right, can we get a vote?
Representative Mack, we apologize for the delay. It'll never happen again.
It was enjoyable, Mr. Chair.
Oh, it's not over. Why don't we give everybody a chance to take a look at this? Nothing different other than I'm not even sure which engrossment is on, but it is the correct engrossment. Representative Mack, is that what you were working off of?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the first engrossment.
And we'll continue to stall for a few minutes. We're having more copies printed if anybody in the audience wants, and I don't know that we have enough yet for the committee, but it's... Okay, all the members have the correct. We are working off of the first engrossment. Representative Mack, we'll keep going, but we'll have you talk slow, if that's okay, just until we get more copies down for members of the audience.
Sure, Mr. Chair.
I will just to make sure again.
Representative
Mack, Representative Driscoll had a good idea, just to make sure we're doing this right. And I will check with staff, too, because what I'll do is I'll move this engrossment. I think we're okay having moved the House file, but I don't know if we need to double-check and move this engrossment. And then do we need to do anything different with the amendment? Because I believe the amendments were drafted to the engrossment.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. The amendments were drafted to the first engrossment, which we now have in front of us.
Which now we're working off of.
So you may want to just move House File 5, the first engrossment.
Okay, and then I will do that. And then do you want us also to just quickly re-vote on both of those amendments to make sure we're... I know that the amendments were drafted to it, but we didn't properly have the engrossment in front of us.
Mr. Chair, I'm not 100% sure on the rules, but you might as well do it.
We're going to do it because it won't take very long, and that way we're covered. So, Representative Mack, what I'm going to do, put the cheaters on, I'm going to move the first engrossment of House File 5, so that is properly in front of us. And then we're going to go back, and the first amendment we did was the A-14 amendment, which was the lengthy amendment that you went through that Representative Davids had a question on, and I think Representative Dean. So, members, with your indulgence, 1 second. Do we need to – can we just re-vote on this, or do we need to withdraw the motion or table it and then vote on it again? That's what I was just wondering. So what we're going to do is my original motion for the A-14 amendment, I'm going to move to table that. I think that should be make it back to where it's legal, and then I will reoffer, take the amendment off of the table and offer it to the first engrossment instead of whatever we were working off before. We think we're okay with that. Thank you very much, Ms. Olson. So members, if there's no objection, I'm going to go ahead and make the motion to what am I technically doing here just to make sure we get it? Just putting the amendment on the table?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Did you already make the motion to table the first amendment?
Okay. I will make the motion to table the A-14 amendment. And then having done that, I will move the A-14 amendment to the first engrossment of House File 5. Okay. We're going to go ahead. I'm going to move to reconsider the vote on the A-14 amendment. So we're not tabling. I'm just going to move to reconsider our vote on that amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, we have reconsidered that. And now that we have reconsidered it, let's do the same thing with the A-12 amendment. I will move to reconsider the vote on the A-12 amendment. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Okay, now we have not adopted either amendment, but we have had them explained earlier, so now I will reoffer the A14 amendment to the first engrossment of House File 5. Everybody with us? Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The A14 amendment is adopted. Now the A12 amendment, same thing. We will move, I will remove the A12 amendment, to the first engrossment of House File 5. Any questions? Seeing none. Those in favor of the adoption of the A12 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Okay, thank you. The A12 and the A14 amendments are now readopted to the correct engrossment, and I think we're ready to proceed. It's going to the Committee on Government Operations. I didn't say that originally, I don't think, but that's going to GovOps. So Representative Mack, now we're back where we were. Do you want to start from the beginning, and we'll rewalk through the sections of the bill so they line up with what everybody's looking at?
Sure, Mr. Chair. So I won't go into some of the extra comments I gave, just kind of let you know what I was referring to. So Section 1, members, is the section dealing with the waiver that I referenced about being able to purchase a plan outside of the exchange and still have access to the tax credits. And then on page 2, starting on line 2.16, it moves through striking some of the exemptions that MNSHR was granted, lines 2.17 through 2.22 dealing with the open meeting law exemption, and then moving down the page on line 2.29, you see the exemptions being struck that deal with the Department of Administrative Oversight and procurement practices. And then as you move to the top of page 3, it's striking the exemption that was given to MNSHR regarding minute oversight. Then as you move to Section 3 of the bill, that has to do with the board composition. You'll see the change on line 3.22 where we're adding a member of the one member who's an insurance producer and two members who are county employees. And then as you move to the top of page 4 on line 1, we're adding the chief information officer of MNTE or a designee. And then that, I believe, is where I left off the first time, so we will keep on moving. To Section 5, members, this deals with conflict of interest for people who serve on the board, and basically this section is bringing into line the conflict of interest that all other public officials operate under. And then as you go to page 5 of the bill, at the top of that, this is one of the auditor's recommendations that we took that suggested that the governor should appoint the executive director of MNSHR. And then as you move down into Section 7, in Section 7, we're on line 5.7 where it says the governor is going to be appointing, again, that's the auditor recommendations, and it continues down onto 5.15. That would make sure that the executive director is operating under normal compensation plan, and again, kind of puts into some protections for Minnesota taxpayers against unwarranted bonuses and makes sure that the way their increases are determined follow the typical process for how that's done. And then as you move to page 6, Section 8 of the bill deals with the Navigator program. And down, you'll see the change down on line 6.33, where we are making sure that navigators are subject to normal background checks that we expect of our brokers and agents as they are out talking to people about sometimes sensitive information in selling health insurance or promoting MNSHR and what health insurance products to buy. And then as we move into Section 9, this deals with the active purchaser language that it was originally crafted and put into the MNSHR, the creation of MNSHR, which would allow for the board at any time to determine if they want to use the active purchaser kind of lever, which would allow the board to determine what products can and cannot be sold within the exchange. And we're striking this, members, as was argued 2 years ago. We already have a Department of Commerce who ensures all of the things listed here on page 8 and determines what what kind of passes muster for what can be sold legally in the state of Minnesota. We believe that the rigor that Commerce puts plans through to make sure that good products are put to the market is adequate, and we don't need this second layer and the effect that that could have on the market and costs within the exchange, we believe, would be very dangerous. And so we're looking to strike the active purchaser piece. As you move down the bill into Section 10 of the bill, this deals with the Legislative Oversight Committee. And basically, we're making two changes. One is ensuring that the Legislative Oversight Committee would meet at least once a quarter throughout the year. And then on lines 9.13 through 9.33, it spells out some additional information that should be referred and related to the Legislative Oversight Committee for accountability in terms of enrollment numbers, budget issues, things like that about the operations of MNsure. And then the final section, Section 12 of the bill, deals with the transition from the MNsure compensation plan to a plan approved by the legislature. So again, dealing with the typical compensation plan and ensuring some taxpayer protection from unwarranted bonuses and things of that nature. And so, Mr. Chair and members, with that, that is the bill that's in front of you.
Thank you, Representative Mack. And to anybody in the audience that wants a copy, I think if you ask the page, we now have more copies of the first engrossment, and I wasn't paying attention. Maybe people have those or had them already. Representative Scott, you have a question?
Yeah, just a really quick one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to remember, Representative Mack, MNsure is not a state government agency. Am I right? What is it?
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You bring up a great question, Representative Scott. It is not a state agency or state department, and there's a chance that House Research could help. I don't know the exact language used. It is a state board, essentially, is my understanding. And so it operates separate from an agency. As you know, they don't submit a budget to the legislature that we have to look at and approve. They don't get a direct appropriation. They're theoretically self-financed through the gross premium tax that they collect on plans sold in the exchange. And so it is a separate board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Thank you, Representative Scott. We have two amendments here. I'm sorry, Representative Johnson.
Oh, we'll wait till the amendment.
Okay. We have two amendments from Representative O'Driscoll. Which one do you want to offer first?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to do the A-15 amendment first, please.
Okay, the A-15 amendment. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, A-15 really just helps to strengthen and dovetail into the work that Representative Mack and others have done in improving the quality of service and service delivery and expectations for Minnesotans as they go to the exchange. But A-15 does, if you look on page 6, it talks about the navigators and needing background checks and criminal background history. I would like to offer the A-15 amendment, which actually requires the navigators to go through some formalized training. In the state of Minnesota, 60K covers insurance agents and producers and requires them to go through a rigorous amount of training, state-mandated testing in order to be able to sell products to the consumer, and also requires continuing education in licensing cycles for those individuals. And what we're doing is we're looking for a short course, if you will, that covers a lot of the terminology that navigators may come across in the insurance industry when trying to help individuals and Minnesotans trying to acquire coverage. And I just think it's a good consumer protection provision. And I was originally going to just offer this and then have a discussion on it and withdraw it, but looking at the work that Representative Mack has done, I would really like to add this if Representative Mack is open to the A-15 amendment as an amendment to her House File 5.
Representative Mack, will you look at the amendment? We have a question to the amendment from Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess my question would be for the amendment author, Representative O'Driscoll. In looking at it in Section 4F, where it talks about the background checks, it puts the onus on the cost of that check to the actual navigator. And I'm curious, when I look at the amendment which begins on 1.5. Who then is going to be paying for this training course? Is that again going to be on the navigator, or is it going to be something that's covered through MNsure and the commissioner?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dean. It's silent on that provision because that can be something that could be negotiated between the employing entity of the navigator. It could be a precondition of employment, or it can be after one has been hired, that the entity that employs them will have the opportunity to be able to provide that training. So it's silent to be able to be flexible in an employment situation, very similar to what we do in insurance.
Representative Dean?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It sort of seems interesting that we put the onus on the navigator for the background check, and then we add this other education components, and we don't say who is going to be responsible for paying for that. And I know it's easy to say that, you know, it's flexible and we can move it around, but at some point someone's going to pay for it, and it'd be great if we knew in the bill who was going to pay for it.
Representative Davids?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got maybe a couple questions. I hope you do not withdraw this amendment. And for me to sit here today, I'm horrified, mortified, and terrified that I'm going to speak in favor of continuing education. I can't believe it. But in this case, it is so necessary. And these navigators, now, first of all, I would say the navigators should pay for the training. I don't know if we can get an amendment maybe at the next stop in probably my favorite committee, GovOps. If we could get a member to say that the navigators pay for this, insurance agents pay for their licensing and training, can be thousands of dollars. But this group has been devastating to people. I have talked to navigators, and the advice they have given people has just been frightening. And as far as the background checks, I mean, you could be an axe murderer and you could be a navigator. And that's a true statement. You could be, because there's no background checks. And so these people are giving advice, and when I have interviewed some navigators myself, the advice they are giving is not in the best interest of the client. And so I think in this case, Mr. Chairman, and to the author of the amendment, the A15 amendment, this is a great amendment, and I hope you do not withdraw it. Otherwise, I'm going to put the word tax on there, and you'll see it later. Because they are untrained. They have no idea what they're talking about. They're giving advice that is very financially harmful to Minnesotans, and this is a great amendment.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, thank you. One of the reasons why I said I was going to withdraw it and then not is I wanted to get Commerce input on it because it is a licensing issue. I have the distinct privilege of being on the committee where this is being re-referred to, the government operations, and so I wanted to take the opportunity to be able to hear what the questions and concerns were here. I've actually had a few members give me a few notes of some ideas and things. And Representative Mack, if you remain open between now and the next stop in government operations, I would be happy to be reauthoring this amendment to deal with some of the questions and concerns.
Representative Davids, hang on for 1 second. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Halverson, to this point.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative O'Driscoll, as you're making your doing your work in between committees, I'd be very curious to know if anything has been created in rules regarding training for navigators, what training they go through now, so we have some kind of comparison. I think we're assuming that they're not going through any training, but I don't know if that's true, and I don't know if it's anywhere in rules that we're going to codify, so if there's any chance to be efficient and save money, it might be helpful to take a look at that.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Representative Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the author of the amendment and the bill. If you look at line 1.9, the second word, line 1.10, the fourth word, I think we're fine.
Basic college, Mr. Chair?
Representative O'Driscoll.
As is Representative Davids referring to the basic tax knowledge that would bring it into his tax committee if it doesn't come the way he's hoping it does?
And Mr. Chairman and Representative O'Driscoll, line 1.10, we see all tax credits.
Thank you, Representative.
Chairman Chesky loves them.
So, Mr. Chair, at this time, I would withdraw the amendment knowing that this is an important. Sir, Representative Davids. This ensures you get a chance to see it in taxes. But I will work with you between now and the time that it comes to government operations, because I do feel that this is a strong consumer protection, a matter that that we need to look at. We require others who sell insurance and sit across the kitchen table to have this training and hold them accountable to a pretty high standard in Minnesota. And we're working with a lot of vulnerable people and persons who maybe not aren't educated on insurance with other people who aren't educated on insurance who are making that purchase. So, Mr. Chair, withdraw the amendment.
Representative O'Driscoll, I like the amendment. I'm glad you're withdrawing it at this time and work with the various parties and offer it again in the next stop. That, Representative O'Driscoll, is much appreciated by the Chair and the committee and very statesmanlike, I would say. And with that, we will go to the A13 amendment. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A13 amendment kind of dovetails into what we were looking to do with the A15. It talked about the navigators and others having some kind of formalized and approved training. This just simply limits the scope of MeanSure as to the products that they can offer. As this committee has seen time and time again, and this year with a certain gaming in, situation that came, there's sometimes this creep that happens that may be outside of legislative scope. All this does is defines that the products that MeanSure can offer are health plans and dental plans. In the Minnesota licensing law 60K, one's allowed to be able to, by procuring a life and or health license, selling long-term care insurance, selling disability insurance, as well as life insurance. None of those products are health insurance based, and I want to go on record in statute so there isn't any ambiguity for the folks at MeanSure like we seem to be having in some other agencies and departments.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Davids has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. More of a comment, I would say. It was brought to my attention, I think it was last month, that MeanSure may be thinking about getting into other lines. And it, I mean, if it's car insurance or homeowners insurance, but the big four right now, I would think, would be disability, life insurance, annuities, and long-term care. We need to set in stone that they cannot get into any other lines other than what statute says they can. And I think we should support this amendment because, members, if we don't, you're going to get inundated by the Big I, the PIA, NAFA, MFSE, and the MDRT with great concerns, because what you'd have is you'd have a state, if you want to call it an agency or whatever it is, a state board or whatever this thing is, in competition with actual legitimate disability producers, life insurance producers, annuity producers, or long-term care producers, where we've spent over $200 million. So the MeanSure would have a $200 million advantage, although that $200 million, it's gone down the drain, nothing's worked. So they're not really probably a threat that way. But if you want to start getting the phone calls and the letters and the door knocks at home late at night, if you don't want to get that, I'd be supporting this amendment. Because sometimes these agencies, especially MeanSure, has a history of doing whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do it, and we have to lock it down saying they cannot get into, I mean, they can't do what they're doing, so why in the world would we consider letting them do something else? So I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Mack, do you want to comment on the amendment?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair and members, I would say I think it's a great amendment. Would be happy to take it. I think And my bill gets at this same objective, is trying to make sure that MeanSure has the ability to focus on its core mission, and that is to make sure that people have the ability to find the health insurance that they need for them and their families. And certainly that has proven challenging already. I think we want to protect anything that might infringe on them accomplishing their core mission, and I believe this amendment does that.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Not seeing any further questions, we'll go ahead and vote on the A13 amendment. Those in favor of the adoption of the A13 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. I believe that is the last amendment before us. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Mack, do we now want to start with testifiers?
Sounds good, Mr. Chair.
The first person I have on the list is Ms. Commit, who I think is here. Ms. Commit, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit. I'm here for the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the experience that the health plans have had with MeanSure. We appreciate the efforts that the legislature is making to try to address some of the problems that have been occurring We know that the people who are working at Minshew are working very hard to try to address these problems as well. But here are a couple of thoughts about additional ideas you may want to consider as you pursue Minshew legislation. First, we think that Minshew should do only what is minimally necessary to help Minnesotans enroll into coverage. That Minshew should stop doing anything other than what is absolutely necessary to perform the most basic functions, and rather focus their attention on enrolling Minnesotans into health care coverage. We think that it's really important to make these basic functions work for anyone who seeks health care coverage, and any other activity devoted to anything else should be stopped immediately until the basic functionality is fully operational. Second, I would just Representative Mack's changes to the board composition. We think that there needs to be more board members who have relevant experience and expertise in health insurance matters and, frankly, IT systems. So, for example, benefits administration, healthcare finance, health plan purchasing, healthcare delivery, et cetera, et cetera. We think that'll make for a more informed board that can provide more direction to the operation. Third, we'd like to see that the Senate be required to approve all the board members. They don't have that. There's not that check on who gets appointed to be a board member now, and we think that process will help to eliminate conflicts of interest by board members and ensure board appointees are put through the same process as those who serve on other state agencies and boards. We would also suggest that Minshew be required to follow the full rulemaking process under Chapter 14. As Minshew ramped up, it was permitted to follow expedited rulemaking authority. But now that Minshew is operational, those extenuating circumstances no longer exist. And so we believe Minshew should be required to follow the regular rulemaking process going forward to ensure full stakeholder input as required by law. I know this isn't the tax committee, but we do have the tax chairman here, so I'll just make mention that we would like to see the 3.5% premium tax repealed. We would argue that Minshew is a public good. It's a tool to increase access to health care coverage for Minnesotans, and as such, Minshew should be financed through a broad-based funding mechanism that is transparent, scalable to enrollment, and predictable. This would provide greater legislative oversight of how Minshew is funded and what the appropriate funding levels are. Like all other state agencies, Minshew would be required to live within its means and manage its budget accordingly. Minshew would be more accountable to the legislature and consumers if they had to justify their annual funding. The next item is just to repeal the active purchaser requirement, and I won't go into that, but Representative Mack has already taken care of that with her amendments, so we appreciate that. I would also just add that I think it's important that we look at creating a broker portal. This would, Minshew should immediately create a portal to allow agents and brokers the ability to help individual clients to update and modify their coverage as personal situations warrant. One of the biggest problems we're having is that there are these so-called life events when someone has a baby or they move or they change jobs or they have an income change, something like that. And it has been very difficult to process these life events. And there are over 650 life events still waiting to be processed from 2014. I've heard that there are already 3,000 life events waiting in the queue to be processed as of the first of the year. And this creating a broker portal will help to eliminate the backlog of these life events and changes in circumstances that have plagued Minshew and left people in limbo. I would also add that we would be interested in seeing an opportunity for what we call direct enrollment, and that would allow a carrier to assist an individual who comes directly to the carrier to enroll on the exchange, including those individuals who wish to obtain subsidies for which they may be eligible. And then lastly, just throw this idea out there that the legislature think about tying any additional spending of federal dollars to verified improvements in functionality prior to the next open enrollment period. We think it would be worth looking at tying the spending of federal monies to verifiable improvements in system functionality. and would encourage that these functionality goals be achieved 30 days before the next open enrollment period begins for 2016. So with that, I'll conclude my comments. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Kmit. We appreciate it. Ms. Kmit, before you leave, Representative Davids had a question. I think it's a tax question, but I'm not sure.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I thought that'd be funnier.
I do have a couple of questions here. One of them is the tax question. First of all, members, let's not fool ourselves here. This bill, which I'm supporting, is not a fix to MNsure. MNsure has failed. It's gone down. It can probably last till about next February, and she's gone. Okay, so we're looking at fixing things that aren't going to be there in a very short period of time. You said that MNsure was operational, but it's not functional, I would say. The life events, think about this, folks. We have folks getting married. We have folks having babies. We have folks with these various life events. They're not on the policies. They're not on the policies. MNsure has failed so tremendously that people are hanging out there not knowing if they have coverage or actually they don't have coverage. The other issue, how would, for Ms. Kmit, how would the broker portal work? Because very, very few agents, the few that were brave enough to get on board the first year, I think somebody told me, I don't know the number, 75% have left. So there are no agents left to take care of these because you can't sit on the phone 8 hours and then be told something and then it's not true, it's not followed through with, it's not done. So agents, the licensed agents that actually know what they're doing, aren't doing this. They're not doing it. So how would you see a broker portal when very few agents have remained signed up to take care of on-exchange policy? Now, they can do off-exchange anytime they want, but the on-exchange policy, then, Mr. Chairman, I have one follow-up.
Ms. Kmit.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, you know, the world is a different place today, March of 2015, than it was a year ago when more agents were participating. And you raise a good point. Perhaps there is no further need for broker portal. I think there are probably still some agents, and I know we have some representatives of the health underwriters here who could maybe address that. But we were just trying to think of ideas that could make it easier and better for agents to serve their customers quickly and resolve those problems without having to wait for the systems to get fixed at MNsure.
Well, thank you, Ms.
Kmit. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Kmit, from what I understand, there's supposed to be a seamless situation. You go to MNsure, and then it's like the Travelocity, and then each carrier just gets the stuff sent to computers, and off we go. Are you still receiving... Two questions. Are you still receiving paper spreadsheets with paper applications, number one, after $200 million invested in this failure? Number two, you said get rid of 3.5%. Do you believe this legislature has any appetite to fund MNsure in any way? And if you got rid of 3.5%, how would you replace that money?
Ms. Kmit.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, in response to your first question, the answer is no, we're not getting these files sent electronically yet. What we are receiving, what the individual plans are receiving, is an Excel spreadsheet that they then have to review and make sure, audit it to make sure that all the errors have been cleaned up. Then they have to translate it into a format that can be uploaded into the computer system. That's called the 834 that we should have gotten from MNsure. And it can take several days or even longer because of the it truly is a manual process where people are having to eyeball these things and go through them to make sure that everything is complete and filled out and accurate. So that is still occurring. And because that process takes longer, we can have more errors, and that's just an unfortunate reality. With respect to your second question regarding the taxes, again, I guess how this should be funded is really a question for the legislature. And if the legislature, in its wisdom, decides that it's better to have the 3.5% premium tax or to look at other options, we think it would be better to look at other options. We think, again, because it's supposed to be a public good for the entire state of Minnesota, that it would be make sense to fund it through a broad-based funding source. But whatever source that is entirely up to the legislature.
Thank you, Ms. Commit. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is my second last comment. What do you think the chances are getting us an alternate funding source through the tax committee?
Representative Davids, was that what we like to call a rhetorical question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we'll make it one real quick. The other thing, I just have to say to Ms. Commit and to all the carriers that are representing, I see the blue, there's Health Partners, there's Preferred One, whoever's in here. I apologize to you. What we have done to you is unconscionable. We have taken the best health care system in the world, the best state in the best country in the world, and we have ruined it. If you come to my office, let's say in July, and you need to buy a health insurance policy, I can't sell you one. So much for access. So I apologize to you. I apologize to everybody in this audience for what we have done to you. And I pray for you every night.
I do, actually.
Thank you, Representative
Davis.
Thank
you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for hanging out, Ms. Commit. My question actually is to the author and to the testifier. Part of your bill is going to be changing board composition, and so, Representative Mack, I wanted to hear why you chose the individuals you chose to add to the board, and then also to hear from Ms. Commit in terms of how you see expanding the board roles more than what's defined in this bill, how you would see that working with health plans or providers or whoever it might be that might get added based on your comments. And I'm thinking particularly, I think that plans have some experience in this from being part of the MNSHA board, MSHA board in the past, or utilities being part of the Public Utilities Commission in the past. So how does that work, and how do you balance the notion of conflict of interest in that? So two questions to one question.
Representative Mack and Representative Halverson, if you can indulge me for a second, that's part of the bill that I worked on with Representative Mack, the board composition. And one of the things we wanted to avoid was having, the CEO of Blue Cross or something. We wanted actual brokers that are working with, not just with the insurance companies, are working with MNSHA, but working with people. And that's, I think, also why we wanted people from the county on there, just so they can, if there are small relatable fixes, things that they're seeing every day and ways that they can easily make suggestions to easily fix the system, we kind of wanted people that are in the trenches, so to speak. If that's, and Representative Mack and Representative Halverson, thank you, but Representative Mack can probably say it better than I did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson. No, I would echo what you said, Mr. Chair, and just I think that the county voices, I think pretty much everyone around the table in MNSHA would acknowledge that was, and I believe Representative Atkins, we've talked about this before, that should have been done 2 years ago. And it's clear that had they have been on the board, a lot of the problems with the public program enrollment part could have been avoided, just small things, and that was unfortunate that it didn't start out that way. So that, to me, is a really wise step in the right direction. Same with the Minute CIO, with the IT pieces. I think that's critical. And then what Representative Hoppe said when it comes to the insurance producer, those are the people that are on the ground. They're the front lines to the consumers, and that is sorely missing on the MNSHA board right now in terms of the realities of what's happening out there. I don't think that message is getting into the board meetings of MNSHA, at least from the ones that I've listened to. So maybe to the second part of your question, Ms. Commit can speak to that.
Ms. Commit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Halverson. I guess I would just say that, we do have a strong health insurance industry here in Minnesota, and there are a number of people who have retired from the health insurance industry who maybe have long histories of what has happened in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and I think that there could be some benefit from tapping into some of that knowledge and experience that could have been helpful on this MNSHA. I don't know that, I'm very sensitive to the conflict of interest issues, and we wouldn't want to violate that at all. However, I do think there is value to taking advantage of the knowledge base that we have in this state.
Thank you. And Representative Halverson, Representative Mack, thank you. I know the chair ideally should be answering questions. It's so rare I have an answer. Mr. Graves, if you want to come up, you're the next on the list.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davids.
While he's come up, I'd like to ask for roll call, please.
Roll call having been requested. Mr. Graves, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just very briefly, I want to thank Representative Mack for bringing the bill forward, and want to point out a couple of things in our author's amendment today that we're particularly supportive of. One of which mirrors a piece of legislation that Representative Baker introduced, House File 1381, to require the early release of rates prior to open enrollment. This is something that we think is particularly important, both for individuals but also for small employers, as renewals for small group insurance have gone up in recent years. A number of small employers have begun to try and figure out other ways to ensure that their employees can access health insurance. And so some of them have found that their employees may be better off with maybe a defined contribution, coupling that with any tax credits that are available for the, through the exchange and or cost sharing. And maybe better off going to Minsure to purchase insurance that you know they can take with them to other jobs. But in order to make that decision in a timely manner, you know they need access to those rates before open enrollment, so they can sit down with their employees and make those decisions. So appreciate that being added to the bill. And then the second piece mirrors legislation that Representative Albright introduced, House File 1316, which. Would require the Commissioner of Commerce to seek a federal waiver to allow small employers to receive access to the Small Business Tax Credit without having to enroll in SHOP. As was said before, SHOP just isn't working right now for small employers. There's about 185 enrolled through SHOP now. But there's about 30,000 businesses in Minnesota that, just by way of their size, could potentially otherwise qualify for that small employer tax credit that aren't getting it because of the difficulty of navigating SHOP. And so want to certainly thank, again, Representative Mack for adding that to the bill, and happy to answer any questions you may have. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Next on the list, we have Chris Schneeman. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Schneeman. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Hoppe. My name is Chris Schneeman. I am an independent insurance agent, own a business here in St. Paul called Seven Hills Benefit Partners. Also, I serve in the Legislative Committee for the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, or MAHU, a small business owner, and am very thankful to Representative Mack for putting this bill out for your consideration. A couple of quick points, I think maybe self-evident to many of you, but it's a good reminder, is that number one is that selling health insurance to individuals starting January 1st, 2014 is a completely different experience than it was prior to that. And from an agent's perspective, it's fabulous. Every single time we see a customer and they want to buy health insurance, we can sell it to them. Unless, of course, they're in the closed enrollment period, right? So the regular health insurance market is open, and it's easy for us to complete our job as agents, right? However, if you buy or you want to buy coverage through the MinSure mechanism, it's a horrific experience. It's lousy. It's failed. It doesn't work. My point is that we're discriminating against those people who need these advanced premium tax credits. If you're low income, you do not have the same opportunity as somebody who might have means in purchasing a health insurance policy. Key example for those of you in the southeast part of the state, or even for all of us, right, is that we seem to put Rochester Mayo on a pedestal as a great place to have access to health care, that we can go there if we need to. Under the MinSure product line in 2014, there was only one policy out of their whole menu that afforded you the opportunity to be in network at Rochester Mayo. That is just a huge oversight. And it's a function of a little bit of arrogance in the way they designed this thing. So these lead me to support with great enthusiasm the notion that a person who doesn't have the means, that is a high income person, should have the ability to go direct to any insurance product that's available in the marketplace, managed and regulated by the Department of Commerce as anybody else. So, Representative Mack, your amendment or your bill certainly brings us in that correct direction. My second point is that, and it's been well addressed with regard to the board appointments, it is appropriate to have an agent on the board. It's appropriate to have county employees on the board. These are the boots on the ground. We as agents only earn our income and our livelihood when our customers are satisfied with our performance. We don't get paid unless a customer buys something from us. And they could buy from anybody. So we have to be truly their advocate. And I think that type of unique experience would bode the board well in serving the Minnesotans. And I do appreciate Representative David's comments about restricting the types of products to qualified health plans only. It is evident right now that Minsure will run out of money. And they will desperately seek new resources, and selling other policies should not be one of those paths for them to try to balance their budget. So with that, I will close. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my request for roll call.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Thank you, Mr. Schneeman.
Thanks.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Hickey.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Sorry I didn't get to you earlier. I was going to send a note to Mr. Reynolds, but opportunities arisen. Mike Hickey again with the National Federation of Independent Business, and a lot of things in this bill we do support. I want to thank Representative Mack for bringing the bill forward. This is long overdue. We've had just a miserable experience with this health insurance exchange, as everybody is very, very well knows. Like the idea of people being able to try to receive the subsidy, purchasing coverage outside of the exchange in the outer market, I think that's going to save people a lot of grief. The real problem with small businesses, though, and it has nothing to do with Minsure, is just the shop plans with this really low salary requirement is going to make this very unworkable, and it's not going to help a lot of small businesses. A $25,000 average company-wide salary to receive the full credit, that's part-time employment in the metro area. I mean, find somebody, you know, find a company that's, you know, has only that, and you're going to find possibly a real small retailer or coffee shop or something phasing out at $50,000. I think the problem for a lot of small business people so far is it wasn't worth the grief to try to pursue it. You're probably getting a small credit, and trying to tolerate the exchange process just made it very unappealing, but there's nothing this legislation can do about that. So I think moving it to the outer market, making it easier for people, at least they could look at that option, but that salary requirement is so low. We also support changing the board composition. Minsure needs a real shot at reality, and having insurance agents and people from county government on it would be very helpful. We strongly support repealing the active purchaser provision that never should have been in the bill. We were strongly against that. Our Commerce Department puts insurers through quite a rigorous process, validating their rates, putting an actuarial stamp on it, and giving this board the authority to autocratically eliminate people from the market never was a good idea. It's hard to believe it ever would occur with Preferred One pulling out, and we need more people being involved in this market, not less. We really support, I'm not sure I followed every amendment, Representative Mack, but hopefully we're extending the rulemaking, the regular rulemaking process to the exchange. There should be no outs on expedited rules. Very concerning for people who live around this issue and getting very little say or no say in what the exchange is doing. We strongly support the salary requirements on the exec and others at Minsure. These people are not managing risk. They're not running an insurance company. They're state bureaucrats, and they're working with a public program. And I think those salary limits are very, the guidelines are very appropriate for what they're doing. And so I think you have a very good fix up here. Obviously, a big unknown trying to seek a waiver. You know, maybe that puts a 2-year time delay in the bill, but I think it's all a very good package of reforms.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Representative Dean has a question for the author, for one of the testifiers.
Well, I think the author or anyone can possibly answer.
Representative Dean.
As I'm looking at Section 1, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm struggling with this whole notion because my understanding is the credit is a federal tax credit, correct? And as a federal tax credit, when someone signs up through MNsure, they're eligible for the federal tax credit. Now, if someone signs up outside of MNsure, this would then allow them to receive that federal tax credit as well. And that would be based on the federal waiver. I'm assuming that the federal waiver allowing us to do that. So in light of that, I mean, I think I understand what, you know, 90% of the bill is trying to do. If we don't get a federal waiver, then what does that mean to all those individuals who went through this process in hopes of getting that federal tax credit, and now all of a sudden they find out they don't?
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dean. I don't think there would be an in-between process, just to address your last point that you made. They wouldn't be doing anything while we're waiting to receive the waiver. It would only be once that waiver was in place that we would then start to allow people to purchase the their insurance outside of the exchange and still receive the tax credit. And the whole motive behind this particular waiver is that Minnesota has always, as it's been alluded to, has always been a leader in healthcare, how we deliver healthcare, how we pay for healthcare, how our health plans operate in this state. And the exchange has dynamically changed the paradigm. And we have applied for many, many waivers. Anyone who serves on HHS know that we have waivers all over the place because Minnesota has always believed and has proven that we can do things differently and better than what the federal government stipulates. This proposal simply tries to build on that tradition, saying, listen, this exchange is shrinking the market within the exchange. And as it was, I think, very accurately stated, it's creating a level of discrimination between the haves and the have-nots. And that if you don't have the means, you're pushed through a very frustrating, unreliable process. But if you have enough money, you can shop anywhere with much broader plethora of options, maybe better product for you and your family. So the mechanics of this would basically just say that we could have a process by which somebody would still go into MNsure. It's a clearinghouse of sorts. They could go into MNsure, put in all of their private data, IRS stuff, that pings against the federal hub, and at that point, their credit is determined whether or not they get it and the amount. And then there would be some sort of a mechanism, and in talking with the plans and MNsure, there's been processes for this in the past, we know, because of enrollment problems of the past year. So this would be what would be developed, but you would then have that information, bring it to your plan, and that tax credit would be applied to your premium, that would be reported to the federal government, and settled up at the end of the year between the federal government and the plan. MNsure has never collected premiums. MNsure does not bear the risk. MNsure's sole role is to just create an experience by which people could purchase their health plan. It's been a broken experience, and we think it's in the best interest of consumers to say if MNsure can stand on its own 2 feet and prove the best shopping experience, the market will move that way. But we as government should not force people through a broken and frustrating system, particularly because they have lesser means. We should allow them the option to shop how and where they want and not be cut off from these federal tax subsidies. And that's what the waiver is going after. And I think it's something we should all be able to support in the interest of Minnesotans.
And Representative Mack, wasn't this also what MNsure did last year after the open enrollment period ended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there was, we have some communications from MNsure where when they were had their backs against the wall with enrollments and backups and things of that nature, there was communications that went out to folks that said, listen, if you're in the queue and you're having problems on MNsure, short-circuit the system, go straight to your plan, buy what you have. We'll reconcile on the back end between your plan and your tax credit and make sure that your premiums are charged accordingly. So there have been processes in the past, and I could go on for quite a while, and we'll have time in future committees on the merits of this waiver and why I think it will free up MNsure to focus more on its core mission. It will certainly ease the burden on the back end. You heard a lot of the numbers about those in the queue for life events, up to 3,000 so far just for 2015 alone. A plan can process a life event in 24 hours. But if you go through MNsure, you'll be waiting for 6 months for that life event to be processed. And I just think we are setting up a very unfair situation for those who go through the exchange just because they need some help with paying their premiums through the tax credit. And so, again, I think that this is accomplishing a very important goal. No waiver is a guarantee. I'm not pretending that it is, but I think it's definitely something to pursue and fight for with the federal government.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mack, for that explanation. I just hope we don't come out of here with people thinking that, you know, people are going to be able to purchase outside the exchange and get the tax credit, because until we get that waiver, we don't know that for sure yet.
Absolutely.
Representative Johnson, did you have a question?
Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly to the question I had before about the items from the OLA report that are in the amended bill. And you wouldn't have to go through it now, but if you could maybe email that to me, you or your research person, that would be sufficient so we don't have to walk through the bill and all that stuff. But
thank you, Representative Johnson. Good catch and good idea. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to come down and testify for or against the bill? Any further member questions? Representative Mack, you've done a nice job with your bill. We'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I just wanted to clarify, I don't sit up here in front of you today proposing that this is a Minsure fix bill. I think that we are far beyond that point, and I wouldn't even pretend to think that I have the ideas on how we would fix Minsure and make this thing work the way it was promised it would 2 years ago to all of us around the table. This is merely what I think are what we are responsible as leaders to do to try to mitigate some of the harm and the damage that consumers are dealing with as a result of Minsure. Good government transparency and making sure that we are doing nothing to constrict choice within the market, and I believe this bill does that. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time. I truly appreciate it and appreciate the support of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Mack. And I'll make one final comment before we vote. I want to apologize to everybody in the audience and the members for the wrong engrossment. And I don't feel as bad about that as the fact that I couldn't remember the word reconsider. So thank you, Representative Dean and Davids, and thank you to staff for helping me out on that fairly complex word. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 5, the first engrossment, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to GovOps. Thank you, Representative Mack. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We are adjourned.